Yeah. I just want to discuss two subjects,
mm-hmm.
agriculture and manufacturing.
Okay.
I think that recently I've been hearing the public have been outcrying about agriculture in Barbados. And first of all, I don't think that we are really being as open and honest as where we are, because our biggest agriculture product many years ago was sugar. And the late Prime Minister Owen Arthur, along with Edwin Carrington, and I think two other ministers, went up to the European Union to ask for an increase in the sugar production from within the Caribbean. And they were bluntly refused, and that put pay to sugar within the Caribbean. Because obviously, what we were asking for, the European Union was not prepared to go away. Because obviously, you have countries like Latin American countries, like, say, Brazil, who have almost 205 sugar factories, and other countries that who can provide sugar at a cheaper price. But that has caused the demise of sugar in the Caribbean. Well, not so much the Caribbean, yes, and Barbados as well, because I remember you travel from, say, leaving Dodd's prison, traveling to as far as Colleton Plantation in St. John. That whole stretch of road from there all the way back up to Colleton Plantation, past the Lodge School and Society, used to be all sugarcane ground. You can pass there now and you don't see anything at all but a pure open field. The thing about agriculture in Barbados is that we talk about using that as alternative to tourism. That's a waste of time. Because first of all, our dollar value is a bit too high in the Caribbean. You got Jamaica who have a devalued dollar. You have Guyana have a devalued dollar and more land than Barbados. You have Trinidad has a devalued dollar. And more recently to anything else, I was just recently going through some articles here on social media. And at this point now is Easter coming up and whatever, whatever. Trinidad's fishing industry is really expensive. I was checking some prices there. Where snap in Trinidad is being sold at $45 a pound, which equates to $15 a pound. And we are talking about agriculture. We had potato chips, these sweet potato chips,
mm-hmm.
and that had been a somewhat of a success. I'm not sure how far it has gone or if it's still going on, but that's another issue. And I think that what is necessary in the agriculture sector is that we need to, if we look at agriculture as a resource, we need to look after the inner side of Barbados, the local side first, because I don't think we have the strength to talk about exportation in terms of agriculture.
Can I say something before you move on?
Go ahead, Dennis.
I tell you why I've been listening to you with a slight smile on my face. One of the first things I think we have to do, sir, is something that we keep avoiding doing, and that is addressing the question of or people's taste. I'll tell you why I say that. You mentioned Trinidad, they collapsed their sugar industry. And St. Kitts. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I remember at one point in Trinidad and Tobago, when I lived there back in between 75 and 80, I could get up in the morning and go into Maraval or Arima and get fresh pineapples grown in Trinidad. I recently saw that Trinidad was importing tens of millions US dollars worth of pineapples in cans. You know why? Because the pizza parlors wanted it. Pizza, which was not part of the diet back, a great part of the diet back in 1950s, 1960s, perhaps into the early 1970s. You talk about the sweet potato chips. I remember that. I remember looking at Bert Wolf on CNN years ago. And he's talking about U.S. New York waking up to a new morning breakfast with breadfruit chips. And I almost choked on my coffee because breadfruit chips I had eaten since I was 4 years and 5 years old, right? Fried, all kind of how. But here's the thing. I remember Eric Williams saying back in 1975 that he was talking to some school children about Dasheen Edda's cassava, and they said to him, that's slave food, we're not eating that. And Eric Williams' comment was, we've lost the battle for children's minds to the colonel from the Confederate South of the United States. That was what he called the fellow with the hat. But that was 1975. So those children that he's talking about are now adults in 2021. I hear the cry, and I've heard it from Ina Harvey. I've heard it from other people going back to when, over 26, 30 years ago, when I was in the hotel industry. Our people's tastes have changed because of education, travel, and advertising on cable television. So as we try to stimulate the resuscitation of our agricultural output and subsidizing or using local produce to change what we import, we have to change the taste of our people.
But Dennis, cucumber,
I mean, carrots go in the backyard, so can tomatoes.
Yeah, but Dennis, you must understand still, although we produce carrots in Barbados.
Yeah. And onions.
These products are still imported in Barbados.
And in large quantities.
Large quantities, that's what I'm saying to you.
I agree with you.
So what I want to say to you, when I hear people on the radio on a daily basis, because I don't really call this program, I listen every day, to be honest with you. But I was taken aback by Sunday's program, when Mr. Greenidge was talking about a diversity in terms of restructuring tourism and for agriculture. That will never work, because what kind of foreign exchange can agriculture bring to Barbados?
So what they're talking about, to be honest, is trying to stop the exportation of foreign, to bring in products. The thrust has been, not only, I think the last administration did it because one of the former government ministers gave me a long list of things that could be grown in Barbados and should be substituted for imports and how much they would save. So I think the thrust for agriculture in Barbados is not so much the generation of foreign exchange, but the stopping the export of foreign exchange for bringing things in. But here's the challenge again. There are chickens raised in Barbados, right?
Lord, you touch your subject. You touch your subject.
I know. I was going there on purpose. I followed you, though.
Yeah.
A chicken that I have seen in any country that I've lived in only got two wings. So when you have people who, let's say, have 10,000 chickens in the yard, let's say somebody is a chicken producer, they got 10,000 chickens. That's 20,000 wings. But when the companies in Barbados want 100,000 wings, where you get from? They can go and get an import license and bring it in. Because they tell you, you could only provide 20,000. I want 100,000. And there goes the foreign exchange. So unless you could get the man locally to start producing 100,000 chickens, so you could get 200,000 wings, and then you're going to be left with, what are we going to do with the rest of this chicken now? Feed it to pigs? So the whole thrust in agriculture, and I'm following you closely, is how we roll it out, how we impress on our people why we're doing it, and letting them know how much we're saving. Because, as you say, I can't see us exporting it either. I really can't.
Well, you see, Dennis, excuse me, I want to say to you concerning manufacturing.
Right. But you agree with the point on chicken, though, right?
Yeah, because I was getting to that point where that you import, and matter of fact, people go for chicken wings as early as 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yep.
From BMC. Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying to you, yes, right? But let me continue a little further.
Mm-hmm.
Manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
I heard Mr. Mohammed mention to Mr. Greenidge how in the early days, they used to produce mostly the furniture for hotels in Barbados.
Correct.
Well, I will say to you that Mr. Mohammed may be right at that point in time. But since tourism have stepped up another notch, and government have realized that the fatted calf or the golden goose has to be protected and has to be at the top of the ladder,
mm-hmm.
they have given concessions to hoteliers to bring in stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And not only bring in stuff, because what you can get out of Trinidad and Tobago to compare with what you can pay for it in Barbados.
Yep.
And that's the problem I keep saying all the time. or dollar value is a problem let me switch back here.
Mm-hmm.
Tobago was harvesting flying fish. And what they have done, they have imported Barbadian workers to go into Tobago to package flying fish
and send it to us.
Back to Barbados.
Yes, you know, sir, I know that very well.
And you see, this is the thing I'm talking about, that we are afraid to talk, to come to the grips of the situation.
Yeah.
So many manufacturers now talking about importing furniture, and I will say to you that the hoteliers here still do support the local manufacturers, because I know beds are being done here in Barbados that are being bought by hoteliers. I work in the hotel sector, so I know what I'm talking about. And what I'm saying to you, if the government have allowed hoteliers and their management staff to travel to Florida or Miami, where the case may be, pack two containers,
mm-hmm.
bring in all the faucets, all the different things that will make the hotel sector more amenable and more exciting, this is what is necessary as such. Because the cost alone is much cheaper to shop over there in Miami and bring home here, where they have concessions to clear their goods.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand what Mr. Mohammed was saying, but at the same time, he's talking about doing this and doing that. Tourism have dealt a hard blow. I was home now for almost a whole year. Nobody never gave me a care package. Nobody never gave me any sort of subsistence or whatever to say how you keep the city, keep you going. I got to fight my way in whatever I do, okay? And I'm saying to you, sir, that the manufacturers in Barbados have to understand that if we are going to really understand where we are,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of things that have to be done.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, that the government financial side have mm-hmm. to be protected.
Mm-hmm.
And Barbados dollar is value very short to the U.S. dollar.
Yep.
Whereas in the islands in the Caribbean, the small islands, you get 236, 240 to the U.S. dollar. In Trinidad, it's 6. In Guyana, it's 200.
Mm-hmm.
In Jamaica, it's 140. So if you buy ketchup and cooking oil from these countries to come here, obviously the cost is much different. And I'll give a very simple example. One snack box of chicken here in Barbados may cost the average Barbadian person with a drink
mm-hmm.
approximately $16 to $17. In Barbados.
Right.
That same snack box in Trinidad and in Guyana,
mm-hmm.
but in Trinidad for sure,
mm-hmm.
it will cost you $7 US or let's mm-hmm. $60 US on average.
Mm-hmm.
In Guyana, it may be $5 US. So this is the thing that we have to look at in terms of, we talk about agriculture, we talk about this, we talk about manufacturing, but what are we going to do to fight the competitiveness of the Caribbean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So, this is a problem that this is personally my issue with this thing we call CARICOM, CSME, and all the other initials we've thrown at it. The shapers of CARIFTA and the heads of government, I think even to today, talk a lot about single space, single markets, single economies, people moving from place to place to legitimately do business and to make the Caribbean a place where the natives of this region can live and work and enjoy themselves. The truth is, we're very far from the ideal. The OECS banded together and they have one common currency, but they too have their issues. Once we have that disparity in the value of our dollars, once we have the disparity in natural resources, and even how we exploit the natural resources. You take Trinidad and Tobago, and Brother Nasser made a point, and he was, in my opinion, wrong, when he said on Sunday that Trinidad don't have poverty issues. I kind of chuckled, because they have all kind of issues, even though they have a diversified economy. But it was dependent on oil. So once the oil dollar crashed, Trinidad had to do all sorts of juggling. Foreign exchange is a challenge for them to get foreign exchange. The banks
Correct.
There are now saying how much you can use your credit card to do, because again, the taste and consumption patterns of our people have changed. I went to Trinidad and Tobago some years ago on a visit with an OCM meeting. And I just went driving around and I saw a billboard saying Imperial Furniture. The lady of the house was with me and she saw the billboard and said, "You know where that place is?" I said, "Yes." So we went there and we were looking around. The guy came and said to us, "What are you doing?" So she spoke and he got the Bajan accent. And he said, "Oh, you're visitors." She said, "Yes." He said, "Well, if you see anything you want and you buy it, I will pay your return to Barbados ticket and I will pay to send it to you."
Wow.
Now, one of the beds in there cost $6,000. Now,
yeah.
$6,000 may sound like a lot in Trinidad and Tobago, right? But if the man says to you, "I can pay to transport it to Barbados, I can pay you for your plane ticket that your return to Barbados," won't you kind of be incentivized to go, perhaps how much this would cost in Barbados? $8,000 Barbados? Or perhaps I should get it for $6,000 TT. If you have that kind of money to play with. You get my point? So you have this kind of rivalry going on in the Caribbean. Let me tell you what's interesting about it. John signaled me for a break, but let me tell you what's interesting about it. We understand each other, so I know you'll hold it until I finish. Here's what's interesting. You have a chain like Sandals building in Barbados, building in Grenada, building in St. Lucia,
Jamaica.
They're based in Jamaica, wanted to build in Tobago, that is dependent on tourism and suffering because of the fallout in tourism and the challenges in Trinidad. They even want to go on their own. They wanted to go on their own since the 1970s. You have a hotel chain like that. If Tobago says to them, "Look, we've given you 150 acres. We've given you this, we've given you that." If Grenada says to them, "We've given you 50 acres. We've given you this, we've given you that." Barbados says, "We could give you only 25 acres or 50 acres too, and we've given you..." We are competing with each other for a Caribbean hotel chain at the same time. And we each trying to get it. And that too, sir, is compounding the problem that we face. Where is this single market and single space and, you know, opportunities for people that we're talking about? Yeah, it just ain't there. So I thank you for that conversation. It certainly stimulated my genes and generated some comment online that I'll read to you as well. This is Dr. Brass Jacks. 434-1790-266-4862 is the WhatsApp number. And I repeat again, we cannot take voice calls via WhatsApp or video calls, or we can take messages like this one, which said, "Do people realize that the receipt of a care package is not a right? The government put this program in place to assist people in need, and it is most unfortunate that, one, people are calling Brass Tacks to say, 'I ain't get a care package yet, what's going on?' And two, some people, from all reports, are taking advantage in various ways of this gesture by the government. It is also kind of unfortunate that it went out or was said that everyone who wants a care package should get one. In that situation, give a person an inch and they'll seek to take a mile. People must realize this is a kindness and should behave in that manner." That's what happens, I suppose, when you have to define what a need means. There are people who say, "Well, I need. It's not that I want or that I have enough for me. It's just that I need." Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Johnson.
Morning, ma'am.
And how are you, sir?
I'm all right.
Well, funny enough, I am calling about the care package. What the government did say is 60,000 care package was going to give out. Well, the trouble is, I call in on behalf of some people who don't have a cell phone nor have a long line. So I called in a long time ago from the beginning, but they drive down to Olders Hill and Oitz Village, but they never stop at the houses that I gave the that need the help, really need the help, Mr. Johnson. And I don't know, I've changed this number about 4 times, and each time I change my number, someone get it. I don't know why. But never mind, I'm here to help people if I can. I was wondering if they're going to go back down to Oldersville and Hoyts Village. I just want to know, because those people I call in for desperately need it. They're not working, they have children, and, you know, that's what I want to say. You know, I know there is a lot of people who need it, and there is some people could do without the care packet, but still take it. And I believe that next time it should be a way to vet the people before they get the payback, you know, this. But this girl, I know, desperately, because, Mr. Johnson, I cannot do anymore. I've done enough. But right now, sir, if you come and look in my fridge and my freezer, there is nothing left in there, you know. And I help as much as I can, but there is so much I can do. You understand? And I wonder if they could let us know if they're going back to Oldersville or Hoyts Village. Down that kind of way, Oldersville way, where St. John the Baptist Church is, then you go straight on like you're going to Oldersville and around near a roundabout, similar like a tiny little roundabout where they pay the horses play or they jump horses or whatever over on the left-hand side. There's people there that really need it, you know, sir?
Okay, ma'am. All right. Yeah? Hope they'll hear you and hope they'll respond. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Johnson. How are you this morning?
I am all right, my brother. How are you?
I'm fine. Okay, one thing I'd like to deal with this morning is the issue where I would have heard people talking about the issue at the polyclinic years ago. Now, I know that I went to a polyclinic. I would have seen the security guards and so on. I am not one going to condemn them, nor to think with their actions. All I am going to say is that I compliment them for trying as hard as they can to facilitate and accommodate in an area where I don't think they were trained or equipped to deal with, but they will try the best. And I am saying that I would have went to the polyclinic for more than one reason, and I tried to see if I could get some information where the vaccine and so is concerned. And let me tell you, nobody like they didn't understand what it is, so I decided to call it a day. But my major problem is this. Mm-hmm. If the senior citizens are going at a polyclinic, and this is just a suggestion now that I'm making to the administrators. Mm-hmm. I believe what can be done is that they can go into the systems and look for the persons who are in the category of the 60s and 70s and so. They have their contact numbers and so with in the computer and in the system, and they can use that system to call these seniors and so on, that mm-hmm. they can make the various appointments and so on, that they will be able to get to the clinic to deal with the vaccination problem. But okay. When you go to the clinic to try to find out something, and then you find nobody can get answered, that is where this causes the frustration.
Okay.
And I believe that if the records, mm-hmm. which should prove that A is over 70,
right.
or A, B is 70, that they can contact these people direct from there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can make the arrangement and so with them that you will go then to get the vaccination and so, rather than trying to get through something, the numbers, nobody in answering.
That is the problem, sir. That's one of the problems.
The administrators, I think these things come from administration thinking and putting things in place and putting it into perfection, rather than to leave somebody that at the bottom of the the system that ain't clearly anything and leave it to that. I believe that it should start at the top. And my suggestion is now that they go into the systems at the polyclinic, find the people there would know who is over 70, they have the medical records, and they can have a thing where they can call the people. Because I tell you, Mr. Johnson, I ain't going back to find out nothing about anything because I had too much problems where I was concerned.
So I agree with you.
Those on Trinidad for trying their best to do what they can do in a system that they don't really train into
doing
where that is concerned. So, thank you.
So I agree with you on that thing about calling out to people rather than have them calling into you, because there are two things about this that I've often railed against, and perhaps, you know, it's just me. I don't like answering phones. Let me say that again slowly. I don't like answering phones. If I had to sit here and hold a phone to my ear to do brass tacks, I would never do it. Never. Because I don't like phones. So when I'm producing the program and I'm trying to listen to two conversations and waiting to hear if news is going to call me, I'm going to call them, or answering the phone gets me, you know, a little jumpy. Because I may miss something somebody say and things will go out. And so I get a little anxious. There are people who, when they call a line, they are anxious. So somebody who calls the Flow hotline or the Digicel hotline or the hospital or BRA, they are upset about something most times. They are trying to fix a problem that they have most times. So if they do not get an answer, or if they get a prompt that says, press 1, press 2, press 3, press 4, if you're frustrated, put on the phone and call back. Or you hear your number 56, we value your call, and you listen to a dread piece of music and comes back and says, your number 56. By the fourth time you hear your number 56 and you're important, you pet the phone on site. So you're now agitated even more because you don't have the service and you're upset. Here's the other side of the problem. Some of the people who are on the other end of the line are not trained to be telephone operators. They've been chosen for various reasons. Some of it not for the ability to deal with an irate customer. If an irate ketician calls a Barbadian operator, they can have different difficulty on understanding them. If an irate Trinidadian calls a Bajan operator, they'll have challenges understanding them. So understand that if an irate Bajan calls a number that is answered by a Jamaican, Trinidadian, Guyanese, they can have problems understanding them. And all they want is to have the problem fixed. So we need to work out this call a number thing, because it's not working in a lot of cases. And having said that, let me tell you that somebody said the number to call is 436-CARE. That's how it is. Let me just double check to make sure I got the right number. But there's a number that they gave that I will go back to in a minute. The Minister of, there it is, 536-HOPE, 536-4673. That's the number for those in dire need of food. You can call 536-HOPE. That's 536-4673. Minister of Agriculture said the focus is on food security and import substitution, and that they are continuing to work on consistency in supply. That's why there's water harvesting and extended irrigation systems and trials for crops like broccoli and onions. And if they don't have consistency and quality, the tourism sector will always be driven to import, and that people didn't understand the concept of saving foreign currency, and that everything we can save helps our balance of payments position. And that's, you know, echoing and underlying what I was trying to engage my caller on, that we also have to pay attention to import substitution.